In Puerto Rico, there's adventure around every corner and natural treasures waiting to be explored, like El Yunque, the only tropical rainforest in the U.S. Get swept away by natural beauty and come away with unique stories that could only be experienced in Puerto Rico and that remind you why you travel in the first place. Visits end, but stories last forever. You don't become a part of the island, it becomes a part of you. No passports required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com. Hey, and welcome to the Short Stuff. I'm Josh, and there's Chuck, and it's just Josh and Chuck. And that's cool because we know what we're doing. We're professionals. We've been doing this for a while, haven't we, Chuck?
Yeah, we're also New York Times bestselling authors.
Isn't that nuts?
that's one of the nicer feathers in our professional caps, I think.
Yeah, and I knew that was a big deal, and I'm very proud of it and have been since it happened. But after researching this, I'm like, wow, this is a really, really big deal, in especially considering that we were on there for 4 weeks. That's a big deal. I'm pretty proud of us for it, Chuck.
Yeah, for sure. And the reason we mentioned that is because, not just to brag, humbly or otherwise, but because we're talking about the New York Times bestseller list, which is, basically the industry standard for how good your book is doing and how sort of hot you are as an author in a snapshot of time or over time. And big thanks to HowStuffWorks.com for some of this, and Sophie Vershaw from Esquire magazine, who wrote a great article about just sort of the mysterious black magic that goes into compiling the New York Times list, even though the New York Times will say, it's just how many books are selling.
Yeah, they publish their methodology, so you know kind of what's going on, but you don't really know exactly what's going on. And there's a lot of people in the publishing world that are very suspicious of the New York Times and their bestseller list. Even though the New York Times goes to great pains to point out that the New York Times bestseller list desk is independent of the editorial desk, advertising, business, culture, even the book review desk. It's a separate department. Mm-hmm. And the reason that they point that out is because they're saying our bestseller list is insulated from pressure from anybody who might be like, this publisher is a huge advertiser with the Times. Why don't you just, bump this one up from 11 to 10 so it can be on the bestseller list. They're saying that they are immune to that kind of thing, and that their list is, like you said, it's a numbers game and it's not curated or editorialized. That's what they say about it.
Yeah, and we'll get more into that stuff. But nuts and bolts wise, the list has multiple categories, mm-hmm. and they all measure different sales types. There are 11 weekly lists, 7 monthly lists, and they are separated thusly. You have 3 categories of books: fiction, nonfiction, and children's books.
Check.
And then those are all subdivided as well. Fiction and nonfiction are broken down into hardcover, paperback, and then print and digital combined. And then nonfiction is broken down into there's another subcategory for how-to books, because I guess they just want those to live by themselves.
Well, that's our list.
Oh, were we a how-to?
We were advice, how-to, and miscellaneous. I need a t-shirt that says that.
And then kids' books are divided into middle grade, hardcover, which is all one category, mm-hmm. Picture books, series, and young adult hardcover. And then you got your monthly list, and that's where you can find like audiobooks, graphic novels, manga, stuff like that.
Yeah, mass market paperbacks, which I was like, what's the difference between mass market paperbacks and regular paperbacks? Mass market paperbacks are printed cheaply and they're distributed like magazines. So they're kind of like their own separate thing. The kind you find in like a little spinner rack at the airport. That's a mass market paperback.
All right. So they say, the New York Times says, all right, we have data sources. We keep them confidential because they want to, quote, circumvent potential pressure on the booksellers and prevent people from trying to game their way onto the list. Mm-hmm. We'll talk a lot about the fact that that still happens probably after the break. But they keep their data sources confidential. They say that they don't use data aggregators and that they're just getting this data from booksellers. But people in the publishing industry say, I just don't see how that's possible. They've got to use aggregators, but they say they don't.
Yeah, they say that every week, thousands of book retailers, digital and brick and mortar, send them their sales for hundreds of thousands of books, and that they weight them differently. Like indie bookstores might get slightly more consideration than, say, like a Barnes and Noble. That's like the details of the formula that no one knows about. But they say that that's where they get their numbers from. That's where they get their data from. And yeah, like you said, some people are just like, that's just not possible. There's something called ReaderLink. There's something called BookScan. These are huge aggregating tools that there's no way the New York Times bestseller list is just completely ignoring those.
Yeah, but I mean, they say they don't. So it's kind of one of those things where they won't reveal all their methodology. I mean, they print their methodology, but like they don't tell you. I saw it likened to like we kind of know what the formula for Coke is, but not the exact recipe.
Yeah.
And that's basically what's going on, because there are plenty of instances where people can point to raw sales data and say, well, hey, the number 8 book sold more books than the number 4 book. How can that be? And the New York Times will say sales data is just one factor and the rest is Nunya.
Yeah, it's like an impenetrable fortress. And they're really, really good on leaks. Like, you don't leave the New York Times bestseller desk. And if you do, you probably turn up dead within a week or two in your apartment.
It's in a body bag?
Mm-hmm.
All right, should we take a break?
Sure.
All right, we'll take a break and we'll talk about gaming the system right after this.
Hey there, are you thirsty? Well, before you take a sip, have you stopped to think about what's in your water? Many conventional bottled waters contain PFAS, harmful substances known as forever chemicals. But you can drink water as clean as nature intended.
Richard's Rainwater collects 100% pure, refreshing drops of rain. Yes, it really is rain, everybody. This rain is caught clean before it hits the ground or becomes polluted with pesticides and contaminants commonly found in groundwater.
Yep, Richard's rainwater is naturally pure with no need for harsh chemicals or additives. That means no added fluoride, no chlorine, no forever chemicals, no microplastics, no nothing.
And you can enjoy the clean taste of Richard's still rainwater and the long-lasting cold-pressured bubbles of Richard's sparkling rainwater. Just visit richardsrainwater.com to find a retailer near you. That's richardsrainwater.com. And we even have a special offer, don't we, Josh?
Yeah, text STUFF to 25129288 87, and you'll get $2 off a 12-pack case of Richard's rainwater. Sip the sky.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So, Chuck, we're back, and you mentioned people gaming the system. It's actually quite possible. It's been done before, and as we'll see, it's apparently routinely done from everybody from, insidious actors, bad actors,
yeah,
to entire publishing houses, their entire publicity department, that people have just figured out how to, if not directly game the New York Times bestseller list to get on it, at the very least, tip the odds in their favor as much as they can.
Yeah, and one, legitimate way you can tip the odds in your favor is something that we did and basically everybody does now. It's called pre-orders. Mm-hmm. And that's why you hear authors hammering home, pre-ordering is a really big deal. Like, we'd really love you to pre-order, because all of those pre-orders get rolled up into the week one sales. So the goal of any author is to just land on that list, even if it's just that one week. And pre-orders are actually one reason why a lot of people are sort of one week and out. We did do pre-orders, so it's not like anything untoward. Everyone does it. Mm-hmm. But we were on for 4 weeks, so right. I felt like we had some sustained sales, which made me feel pretty good.
That's one of the things that I turned up in this research that made me feel good about what we did. So, yeah. So that's one way to gain sales. Another way to do it is involved in pre-orders. We did giveaways. Some people do like speaking engagements. If you ever go see an author and you get a book, like the price of admission gets you a book, that's done to gain pre-orders too. Because if you do, you know, X number of speaking engagements and, you know, you sell 100 books at each one, those count toward that first week. And that can add up significantly and help get you on that bestseller list too. There's other ways to do it that are much more insidious and ham-fisted.
Yeah, like there are companies, and they're not going to say this, they're not going to advertise this on their website, but apparently there have been some, you know, Washington Post wrote about some of this stuff and the New York Times. There's one company called Book Highlight that people, you know, publishing insiders say, here's what you can do with a company like that is you can, as an author, say, here's 20 grand. I want you to go out and buy, you know, however many copies of books that that can buy through various, you know, independent booksellers, spread it out, buy them in small enough chunks so it looks like organic sales.
Right.
It's basically book laundering, really.
Yeah, for sure. Well put.
And then all of a sudden you're rolled up into a week one, you know, bestseller list debut, which is what you're really after. Because just being on the list means you're going to sell more books.
Right. And authors would hire Book Highlight because the author ends up owning those books and they can either give them away, they can turn around and sell them if they want to. But like you said, it's a business investment. It's a shady, unethical business investment that tricks people into thinking your book is very popular, but it's something that can be done. And it has been done before. That's definitely an insidious way to kind of game the system. And the reason that you said they would go out and buy small amounts of books at a number of different booksellers is because the New York Times pays attention to bulk purchases.
Yeah.
They factor that in to where if you have like a 1,000 purchase or 1,000 book purchase from like Amazon or something for your book and that gets reported in your weekly sales, they take that into consideration. They basically say you're trying to game the system. But rather than not include those people, because again, the mission of the New York Times bestseller list is to reflect what the average reader out there in the United States is organically buying on their own, going to a retailer online or in person and buying a book. Rather than disinclude those people who are gaming the system by bulk purchases, they just put like a little dagger, a little cross next to their name. And the thing is, to that author and almost everybody who doesn't follow the New York Times bestseller list methodology, they're a New York Times bestseller. And so critics are like, don't even put those people on the list. You're still legitimizing what they're doing, even though you know they're gaming the system.
Yeah, I also saw, though, where the dagger, which is essentially an asterisk, is sort of a kiss of death.
Oh, really?
Like, yeah, like if you're an author who got the dagger on the list, then everybody in publishing knows the deal.
Oh, right, right. Yeah, yeah. If you're an author, but like if you're, I saw that it's, I think Sophie Virchow said, or Virchow said it's most often used by business authors. They don't care about the publishing world. They care about larger public-facing brand.
Yeah, they said like health and wellness books, self-help books, diet books, and books authored by CEOs. Those are some of the biggest abusers and dagger getters that are gaming the system. So if you see some dumb diet book or some self-help book that all of a sudden is like number two on the list and you're like, how in the world is that selling more than whatever the Harry Potter book is? It's probably because they've gamed the system and look for that dagger. That dagger's probably there. Another few people that have been daggered recently, and this is another way you can do it, is Donald Trump Jr. The RNC bought $100,000 worth of his books in week one. And Jared Kushner, there was a pro-Trump PAC that bought $158,000 worth of his books in week one. So they got the dagger. Multiple CEOs, Howard Schultz of Starbucks, he got a dagger. Mm-hmm. All these daggers around. And like you said, I think for the ego of some of them, they don't care.
No, they don't care. And also, they don't care about the publishing world. They're just stepping into it to use the publishing world to boost their larger brand, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's the big criticism is people who do bulk purchasing. It's like the New York Times bestseller list shouldn't even include them.
Yeah.
Because not only is it's rewarding somebody who's gaming the system, you're also leaving off people who are actual like authors. That's their job. So yeah. Being on the New York Times bestseller list is a really big deal for them. And being left sure. off in favor of somebody who gamed the system is that much more bitter.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing I do know, stuff you should know, no dagger.
No dagger. We did not game the system.
We did not.
You got anything else?
No. I mean, thank you for everyone who bought books and helped us accomplish that goal, because it's not like we did it.
No, we definitely did not. We did not.
I didn't buy any of them. I got mine for free. Did you buy any?
I bought a couple as gifts, but I don't think that had much of an impact.
Yeah, those two pushed it over the edge.
Exactly. You got anything else?
I have nothing else, sir.
Okay, everybody, Short Stuff is out.
Stuff You Should Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.